Hey, what's going on, guys? It's your boy HD, and welcome back to another episode of the Textual Talk. For those of you that are first-time listeners, I am a cybersecurity professional, career coach, content creator, and a podcaster. Today, we have with us none other than Miss Christy Kennebrew. She is a tech talent sourcer at Microsoft, and today we'll be talking about her background, what made her get into recruiting and then sourcing, and also how to stand out on LinkedIn. So if you're ready to learn how to take your career to the next level, then tune in. Also, if you're listening right now on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please make sure you leave us a review and share it out if you found this podcast episode helpful. It truly helps us out when it comes to the podcast algorithm. All right, man, we back in this thing, man. It's a Thursday afternoon. For those of y'all that don't know, I'm your host, HD, and this is another episode of the Textual Talk podcast where we give it to you about cybersecurity, tech news, career advice. Speaking of career advice, we got a good one today, man. I don't know how many of y'all are familiar with Christy, but if you know this sound right here.
Give me her, Christy. Okay, I got you.
Then you know who we got on the podcast, man. She's dope. She has a big following on LinkedIn. She's always giving out free game, and she decided to come kick it with us this evening to give us some free game. So, without further ado, let's bring on our guest.
Hello.
Hey, what's going on?
What's happening? Thank you for having me.
Nah, man. This has been long overdue. I don't even know why I took this long to actually get you on here, but I got you. So while we're letting everybody get in here, y'all know what to do, man. Hit the like button for the YouTube algorithm and share it out, because we're going to be giving out the free game today. So I met Christy, y'all. Like, so I'm trying to see if I give a brief round about it was like sometime last year I seen you on LinkedIn, and I reached out, and then I know I tried to get, like, you know, some referrals for some roles or whatever. But then after that, we just like kind of talked, like, you know, off and on for the most part, just how you doing, and, you know, yada yada yada. I see her make like a lot of good posts, so I always like share them, repost them like I do on like IG and TikTok. And we finally met at Afrotech last November. And so while we're at Afrotech, Christy was telling me about, she, you know, is a chef, you know what I'm saying, or a chef in her past life. So I'm put on the spot right now. And you know, we want to hear, like, what's her go-to dish, what's her signature dish that she likes to make.
So in my past life, I was a foodie. Basically, I went around to different restaurants trying food, but I can't cook though. So
that's. But what can't you cook though?
Well, my favorite thing to cook is wings. I'll be frying in the grease and battering up some chicken, and I can sauce them real good. I make this really good sauce.
So what you're saying is you got to give me higher sauce.
Yeah, give me higher Christy sauce. It's really good.
We're gonna have to put that to the test whenever we do one of these Dallas mixers that I want to put on eventually. But yeah, I know everybody's been working today, and they've been waiting all day to hear what we're gonna talk about. So for the audience that isn't familiar with you, can you kind of tell them, you know, a little bit about your backstory and who you are?
Yes, of course. In my 9 to 5, you guys may know me as Christy Kennebrew, a technical sourcer at Microsoft, where I help engineers. What I help them do? Oh, I help find engineering talent and bring it to the company. I put them through a one-of-a-kind interview process and just tell them all about Microsoft so that they can accept that offer at the end. And in my 5 to 9, you may know me as Get Me Hired Christy, where I'm helping candidates find entry-level roles and roles where they can use their transferable skills. And so that is a little bit about me. A lot of people don't know, but I was born in Mississippi. I'm from Dallas, Texas. Moved to Dallas when I was 6. So I claim the D-town, the triple D. I went to college in Austin. I was in Austin for 8 years. Went to UT, hook 'em. there I majored in sports management. Now I know what you're thinking, has nothing to do with recruiting, and it doesn't, but I ended up getting my first job out of college at Oracle, selling cloud technology. And then from there, I just got tired of sales and was looking for something new. I saw a lot of people going over into recruiting and going into recruiting at Google on a contract. So I used my transferable skills to get over to Google on a contract. Was there for about a year and 9 months, soaked up everything that I could learn about recruiting, and then was able to go over and get my first full-time recruiting role here at Microsoft. So that is a little bit about me and my background.
That's what's up. I didn't know that I looked at like your profile and I was trying to say, man, what type of questions I'm going to find on here? I didn't know that you originally had majored in sports management. I guess what was the process, I guess, about going into sports management? Were you thinking about becoming an agent or something like that?
Yeah. So I really wanted to work like in hospitality. So I thought I was going to go to UT, come back and like work for the Dallas Mavericks or the Dallas Cowboys with like big CEOs and sponsorships and things like that. But I realized real quick, once I graduated from college, I was looking for some entry-level roles and they weren't paying no money. So I was just like, I'm going to have to find something else. And sales was paying that money. We was getting commission checks.
We're going to be touching that too. But since you spent so much time in Austin, so would you agree that Austin is like the white people's Atlanta?
I definitely agree. But the thing is, I miss Austin so much. One thing about Dallas, I think Dallas is home, but Dallas is bougie. One thing I love about Austin, as far as like a Black female or a Black person, you could freely and truthfully just be yourself. It's a very liberal city. And although there's not a lot of Black people concentrated, they're spread out in different areas and usually like in the suburbs. You can truly and freely judge free, just be yourself as a Black person. If you want to be quirky, weird, queer. So that's what I miss.
My first time I went to Austin was like 20, was it early, either 2019 or 2020. I think it was 20, either one of them times. But anyway, I seen this like a college town to me. I was like, yeah, I was feeling like an old head at that time. I was like, this is.
It's now, two sides to it.
Yeah, I guess because I didn't know where to go. Now, I had a blast at Afrotech because, I mean, we was around us. That's what made the blast.
That's not Austin. Afrotech is not Austin.
I know it's not. And I was telling people in my video, I said, I thought I was young again. I stayed out till like 3 or 4 in the morning and had to get up the next day. I was like, how did I do? I was like, bro, what am I doing? But how was it? So I guess why didn't you, let me see, I'm trying to how to say this. Two things. Okay. Mm-hmm. I guess what did you like about tech sales? What didn't you like about tech sales? And could you see yourself going back to tech sales? Let's do that. Cause I do push course careers, you know, guys, if you want to get into tech sales or, you know, IT, they got an account executive course now. Check out Course Careers. Link is in my description and I'm going to put the ticker up a little bit, but for those that kind of may be interested in that, kind of briefly tell us, I guess, about like, you know, what you like, what you didn't like, and could you ever see yourself doing it again?
Yeah, of course. One thing I wanted to point out is I wanted to send my thoughts and prayers out to my colleagues that were laid off today. I know there's a lot of job seekers out there. And speaking of this, you know, we may have to look at different industries and you asked if I would go back. Absolutely. If I had to, it definitely wasn't my favorite. One thing I did like about it was it taught me everything. When I was at Oracle, I started in like the sales program. So this was like the fresh out of college program. It was a cohort that hosted like, I don't know, it was maybe like 70, 80 of us all together. And we went through this learning program. So it taught me literally everything I knew about sales, which was a good baseline. And so that's what I appreciate the most because that is what led me into everything else. And so I'm very thankful for that part. I think some of the bigger things that I didn't like and that may be hard for some people was the cold calling. Yes, I like to talk, but trying to convince somebody to buy some type of technology that they maybe can get cheaper from somewhere else is not my favorite thing. at all. But another thing I did like was those commission checks. So, you know, if tech sales is something that, you know, you can handle, it's a lot of money in the industry. And so, yes, if I had to go back, I will transfer those transferable skills back to tech sales where I first started, and I'll get on them phones, start calling.
That's funny. Yeah, I never seen myself as a, like, I know a lot of times, from what I've seen in sales, like, the stuff kind of sells itself a lot of times, especially if you got, like, a product that's, like, tried and, you know, trustworthy. Like, I know most of my sales guys, when I did used to, like, be in an office, they used to be in there playing ping pong, or I used to work, like, for example, I used to work in Frisco at Hall Park. So for those that's familiar with the area, that's right across from the Dallas Cowboys training facility and the Star. And we used to just like kind of like walk to like one of my little go-tos was the Frisco Bar and Grill, and they'd be in there eating, buying my food and stuff like that. Just on the corporate car, I'm like, I'm not mad at it. Because, you know, because of y'all, it's how I'm getting my bonus. So that's why I always respect the sales folks. Definitely respect.
Yes, usually we have a quota as far as like calls that you have to make per day. I think we had to make 50 calls a day. Usually once you do that, send your emails out, send your LinkedIn messages out, it was pretty good. So it was a grind, but it was very one more so of like a lax after you finished doing what you were supposed to do.
Okay, bet. And for those that's watching, if you have questions, ask them now and we will answer them towards the end. So, yeah, because I see y'all in here, you know, y'all ain't commenting in the chat. Y'all know, get my chat up so we can spread this message. Nice. But, Christy, what made you want to pursue, I guess, use your transferable skills to get into recruiting? Like, what made you want to do that?
First off, to be truthful and completely honest, I was trying to get up out of sales. I was at Oracle doing sales for 2.5 years. And it just came to the point to where I was so tired and we were going through a lot of reorgs and I had to figure something out. And so I saw a lot of people going over to Google on a contract that were in the same role as me, a business development consultant. And I always thought like, oh, they see sales on my resume. That's all I'm going to be able to do. And so when I saw other people going into recruiting, I decided to reach out. I did a bunch of coffee chats and I interviewed for a contracted role. I interviewed for Google one time, full time, didn't get it. And I interviewed for a contracted role maybe 3 or 4 times. And the fourth time was the time that I had got the contracting role. And so that was kind of my motivation for going into recruiting. But when I got there, I started to realize my passion. Like once I started doing the work and saw that, like, hey, I'm really good at this and I need more people that look like me to come over here. That's when it started, when I started to see like, okay, I'm doing this because I need to be a representative for a voice for the underrepresented. So the people that look like me, people that may not have access to these types of opportunities, don't know how to get anywhere because I didn't even know. When I graduated college, even though I was in Austin, I didn't realize I could work at somewhere like Google or Microsoft or things like that. I didn't even apply to anything like that. I don't know because it wasn't anything I had access to or anyone told me about. So I made it my point and I made it my job to let other people know that jobs like this are out there. And when I was doing my job, when I was sourcing, I made sure to look for people like me and to coach them through the interview process so that they can land roles and work for places like Google and Microsoft as well.
That's dope. I'm glad you spoke on one thing, and that's passion. A lot of times people always try to tell people like in tech, oh, you ain't got to be passionate about it and all that. And I just put a video out this week. It's been on a Patreon. If you want to join the Patreon, y'all know what to do. It's talking about how, like, you know, I was probably making the most I ever made, but the job didn't make me happy. Mm. And you can only do that for so long until it starts draining you. And that's what started happening. It started draining me. So I knew what areas in like cybersecurity specifically that make me happy and that I wanted to go back into. And so I'm glad that you touched on like, hey, once you got to doing sourcing recruiting, that's what you really feel like, you know what, I could do this for like 40, 50 years and never feel like I'm really doing it because I like doing it. Mm-hmm. And that's what people have to understand. Like, sure, you can get the money in the beginning, but sometimes you still be miserable. That's why we see rich people miserable. So it's the same thing. It's legitimately the same thing. So what does a recruiter, sourcer, what is like a day-to-day or a typical day? Like what are your roles and responsibilities?
Yeah. So as a sourcer, usually it's interchangeable externally because a lot of people aren't too sure what a sourcer is. But my official title is a sourcer, technical sourcer. And what I do is I'm responsible for going out and finding the talent and bringing them into the interview process. So I am on LinkedIn all the time looking for new talent. Since I source for software engineers, I'm looking for software engineers, pretty junior, 2+ years of experience. And, reaching out to them with a very creative messaging and inviting them to come and chat with me. So we do the initial phone call and we just kind of go over the basics, the role, how the interview process works. And if everything sounds good, then we'll go on to the official interview process. One of the things that I really pride myself on is being able to do one of a kind interview prep. So all my candidates love doing interview prep with me because I make sure that they know everything and that they are ready to ace this interview, right? And so that's one of my favorite parts of being a sourcer is doing the interview prep. And I am very encouraging and a cheerleader for my candidate as they go through the interview process. And usually what happens is there is a transition if the candidate receives an offer, a transition from me to a recruiter that will go ahead and continue the process as far as offer, team matching, negotiation, all of that, all of those good things. But if there is no offer, then I'm the one responsible for calling and letting the candidate know that they did not get the role, which I always try to make it very personal and call the candidate, letting them know and that we can try again, after the cool off period. Because I'm all for multiple times. Again, I'm a voice for the underrepresented. So sometimes I know this is the first time that some people are taking a tech interview. And it's tough and it can be intimidating. But me as a sourcer, it's my job to make that candidate comfortable and to make them be successful throughout the interview process as much as I can. So that's a little bit about my day to day.
And shout out to you for that because hang on. Cause I've only ran into like a handful of recruiters, sources that actually help you out during the process where like they really are trying to help you land this gig. They're being like communication is with you. Oh, hey, focus on this. Hey, this particular hiring manager, or whatever, they like, follow up emails afterwards, ask these questions, all these different things, like, salutes to you, because it's been times where I haven't gotten that and I'm trying to ask questions because the hardest thing about interviewing is like, fam, I don't know what you're going to ask me. Mm-hmm. That's like the hardest part about it. Right. And then combine that with trying to figure out, am I going to be a good team fit with these guys? Like it's really a nerve wracking process. And then, if it's a company with a name, you get even more nervous. You're like, oh my gosh, this is too much. So people like you are definitely, needed in the space. And especially for you saying like trying to look for the people that do not get a big shot like at a lot of these roles, because that's what I was I stitched a TikTok and I was this guy was talking about like black people being successful in cybersecurity. And I did this article like sometime last year about diversity in cybersecurity and how like we were at, I think 7% of just cybersecurity. And let alone, I know our numbers are still in the single digits when it comes to just all type of tech roles in general. And
I was saying in the video how, like, hey, a lot of times, for one, like you said, you didn't even think you could work at a certain place. I know for me, I didn't really apply everywhere either because I'm like, okay, I don't even really don't even know what I'm doing or how to. I'm just applying to apply. That, I mean, you know what I'm saying? But I was like, even then, if you get somewhere, 9 times out of 10, you may not even see somebody else that looked like you on the team. Right. Especially somebody managing you or a director. Like, you know, that's one of the hardest things. Like, you get somewhere and you never see anybody like you that's a director. So you kind of, I know for me, when I see that, I was like, I'm gonna see how this play out. Because there are differences and cultures and biases when it comes to leadership. And if they aren't aware of some of those things, it doesn't mesh well with certain demographics of, you know, employees. But that's dope. So let's get into, we'll start with like one of these, like, I guess right now, and at a high level, we'll say, like, what are you most proud of when it comes to being a sorcerer?
I would have to say, let me tell you about one of my most proud moments that I had. I had a candidate reach back out to me to tell me, you know, thank you, Christy, for putting me through the interview process. This offer is the most going to be the most money that I have ever made. This is going to help me take care of my family. Like, no one in my family has made this much money. And so I'm very appreciative. And so that makes me very proud when I hear things like that, because now not only am I helping my community to get through some of these interview processes, but it's deeper than that. We didn't grow up, you know, just having a lot of money. I didn't grow up in my community, didn't grow up, my area didn't grow up just having a lot of money to take care of our family or, you know, sometimes just living paycheck to paycheck. So if anything makes me proud, it's being able to give people the opportunity to make the most money they have ever made in their lives, or make the most money that anyone in their family has ever made. Because I know that that's just going to keep going up and up. Also, people getting the opportunity to have stock. I know whenever I first got stock and just like certain types of equity, I don't even know what it is because no one in my family has had that before. No one's able to teach me about it. And so now that I see people that may ask me questions on, you know, how does this work? How does this work? And I'm just like, thankfully, we have tools and resources that can teach us how to use this and to become better financially stable and to continue to build generational wealth. But as far as me being really proud about something, is somebody getting that check.
Hey, shout out to you, because that's why, like, initially I want to do, like, went to grad school and went to UD, and I wanted to be a manager at first. But then I realized, I might not be as effective as helping as many people that way. And then, you know, fast forward 2 years later, after that's when I had started, like, you know, my consulting stuff. And that's one of the best things, too. Like, I had posted the screenshot of one of the clients I helped, and he was saying how, you know, I think the percentage increase was, like, 40 or 50%. I think of what he made in like 6 months. I think they went from like 45K to like almost like 75 or whatever. But that, and then you in certain states, like he's in the South. So I think he's in Alabama. So the fact that I was able to help with that, like I tell people, a lot of people say, hey, y'all can believe Blind, Twitter, whoever you want to, man. $75,000 is like life changing for like a lot of people.
For sure.
And especially when we talk about our community, when we know what those metrics are, like what the median household income is. I always tell people all the time on the pod, I said, I don't even know if my parents probably made like 50K put together growing up.
Yeah.
Granted, I was in Louisiana in Shreveport, so couldn't really tell because stuff is kind of priced a little bit appropriately, but even still after that. So I always tell people, don't let these people have you fool. And this might be something as a recruiter you may be keen on. And this wasn't the questions I gave you, but I figured it'd be something easy to ask. So I have two stances on this, right? There are people who have a lot of experience in other places that have the transferable skills that can warrant a high, you know, salary in a tech role. Then there are people that don't have those transferable skills and they don't have any really not a lot of experience or accomplishments under their belt, and they want to jump right into a high salary. What are your thoughts on that? Because my thoughts are like, you know, take what you can get. I mean, negotiate, but take what you can get in the beginning because you're trying to just build your experience up. Those other people who have, you know, a certain level of experience, they may not get exactly what they're looking for, but they still probably get more than a person that doesn't necessarily have like a lot of experience. Have you ran across this with people that's maybe saying, I went to this boot camp and now I'm trying to be like a software engineer, but you know, their resume is kind of like, and they're trying to like, man, I'm finna knock this, you know, stuff out the park. This is what I want to get. And then versus the people that got experience. Have you ran into that?
Yeah. So it's kind of, it's just the same process. One thing I will say is make sure that you prepare really good for those interviews, because a lot of things are going to be based off of the interviews that you do. So I would say, and it's a little difficult for me to speak because it's based off of, when I look at the process, I'm looking at it from a software engineering point, right? And so a lot of those things are just based off of how good can you code, right? But when we're thinking about other areas, getting into tech, maybe some of the non-technical areas, I would definitely say, let's break in first. So let's break in first. If you do have some type of transferable skills, you may not start off making six figures. I didn't start off making six figures when I got into, I started in tech sales, but even when I got into recruiting, I didn't start off making six figures, but I built my way up. And so I would say, be patient with it. And there is opportunities for promotions that come really quick. I got my first promotion at Microsoft in 7 months. So give yourself some time, give yourself some grace to kind of learn and get into the space, but let's break in first.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you said that, because that's giving us a good chance and a way to segue into this question about like what would be a reasonable salary for an entry-level recruiter or sourcer?
Yeah, and I don't mind sharing my first salary coming in. I remind you, I was using my transferable skills. I had no recruiting experience. I was coming from sales, which were a lot of good transferable skills, being able to talk on the phone with customers, just like I talk on the phone with my candidates, being able to achieve metrics, things like that. So when I first went over to Google on a contract, that's another thing too to keep in mind. I was in a contracted role, and so it's a little different than what you would receive working for the actual company. But they offered me $40 an hour originally for my contract at Google. And then I negotiated, because that's what you're supposed to do. I asked for $43 an hour and they gave me $42 an hour. Damn. And so that equates to about $93,000. And so, yeah, I wasn't six figures just going in. Now, I will say the market is changing now. Salaries aren't for recruiting or sources aren't as high coming in anymore. And there is a difference between agency recruiting and tech recruiting. I would say some of the agency sourcing recruiting roles may range from more like 75 to 85 for entry level. And then, you know, your tech salaries, I started off at 94, but I would say it's somewhere between 80, 90, 95.
Okay, dope. And then the next question would be, so if somebody wanted to start off like and be a recruiter, like do they have to go to school, or what type of skills do they need to learn to be able to like land like a, you know, their first, you know, recruiter role?
Yeah, so I don't think that you need a degree to be in recruiting. I actually came and learned a lot from when I was doing my contract at Google from people that did not have any background or degrees. I don't have a background in recruiting. I think some of the main skills is, let's talk about customer service, something that you do in your, you know, your first job or your high school job, your retail job, being able to talk to people. That's going to be the main thing. Being able to attract your customer or your candidate to come to you, especially if you're a sourcer. I have to be able to put myself out there, speak to the candidates and attract them to come and speak with me and look at my company. And so that's one thing I would say is your customer service skills, being able to chat with people, talk with people, being able to achieve metrics. So being very just high driven. I'm going to hit these numbers. I'm going to do this in order to achieve this. So having that type of mindset. But I don't think there's any true hard skills that you need to start off with. And then you just build on those and get better and better.
Dope. I thought about a funny question when you was talking about the applicant stuff like that. Cause I wonder, do recruiters like run into this? And shout out to Jermaine, because he tells people this all the time, like, hey, don't shoot your shot on LinkedIn, right? You ever ran into like somebody who be like, that's a person that you may be trying to get a job there, like they ever like shot their shot?
Yeah, so not necessarily like with engineering, but there's people that may want to work for Microsoft that may reach out to me. And you know, I have a whole different view about shoot your shot on LinkedIn because I'm single. And I know there's a lot of married people there, but I don't take it personally. I'm just, you know.
Like, okay. Oh. All right.
I'm just like, oh, okay, well, you know, I'm able to help this way, but yeah. There's some people that reach out that I guess shoot their shot. Like,
you want to go to the movies? I'd be trying to get coffee and stuff.
So I have had like in-person asks to have in-person coffee chats. And I'm like, no, yeah, that's cool. I mean, you still don't know people. It's still kind of
yeah,
weird.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder how weird it is when somebody say, hey, we ain't got to go get coffee. Like, look, let's get a Zoom link. I'll make my coffee. You make your coffee. And hey, we had coffee on Zoom or something. I think that's
yeah, cool. Or they send you a gift card. I've gotten a gift card sent to me to get coffee for the coffee chat.
Okay. I ain't mad at it.
Sensational.
But, okay, so that's dope. You pretty much hit the nail on the head when it came to the money part and about the skills that will be needed when it comes to that. So we'll talk about this, like coming from sales and then going into recruiting. What's kind of been like some of the biggest challenges you faced making that transition?
I haven't had just like a lot of challenges, because I feel like sales have set me up to come into this area. Now there are some differences as far as like, I'm not trying to hardcore sell to anyone. I'm also not talking on the phone as much or calling companies, trying to get past gatekeepers. So I would say it hasn't been like a lot of challenges. It's actually been really fun. And I've been super excited to just like be in something different. It's been 3 years now since I've transitioned out of sales and I couldn't be happier.
Okay. And then this next one is, what's the biggest misconception people have about recruiting and sourcing?
Okay. So I think the conception is, the first one I would like to talk about is that they're the same. Right. So recruiting and sourcing being the same thing is not the same. You know, like I've explained my role, I'm more so coming, I attract the talent. And then your recruiter, you have some recruiters that do the closing part. So after the candidate has received an offer, I may transition them over to a recruiter that will finish off the rest of the process. Or you have some full cycle recruiters that do everything. They do the sourcing, they do the interview process, the interview prep, all of that. And so my main responsibility is just attracting talent, getting them prepped up and ready to go through the interview process, and also just building up a pipeline so that when roles kind of open up that I have candidates ready to go. Another misconception I would say when it comes to LinkedIn is that recruiters do not have to respond back to you. Recruiters are not obligated to respond back to you. We don't even have to. We don't even got to be on LinkedIn. To be honest, like we don't have to use LinkedIn. LinkedIn does not have to be a part of our job. A lot of us use LinkedIn because it is very useful. I know I have a big network, so I find a lot of candidates from LinkedIn and I find it to be very useful personally. But we do not owe you a response every time. Now, me personally, I try to respond back because I am open and willing and present myself as someone that is willing to help. So I try to respond as much as possible. But sometimes I get messages that I can't respond to.
Yeah. And I'm glad that you brought that up, because now let's get into it, because everybody came here to learn about LinkedIn, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Let's do it.
And for those of you that don't know, because as crazy as this may sound, there's still some people who don't like have a LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. In short, LinkedIn to me is a social media networking platform for you to grow your network and also be able to land jobs. That's how I see it. Mm-hmm. And you can also now, with the inclusion of LinkedIn Learning, you can learn different skills. There are other things that LinkedIn is probably doing, because I mean, they are part of, you know, Big M, but for the most part, that's what it is. I was told about LinkedIn back in 2011. And so I've had a profile probably about that long. However, it wasn't that good back then. I mean, it's had like a little picture. And, you know, one of our assignments was the professor got the people in the classrooms to give each other's recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really flip the switch, no Drake, until about 2018, when it came to really utilizing LinkedIn. And then 2 years after that, I really took it to the next level. I ain't no Christy, but you know, my page is not a slouch. My page is not a slouch either. And it's really, I think for me, it's only just because I'm not consistent enough, like with my posts. Lately I have, they've been hidden.
You don't have to be consistent with posts?
Well, not consistent. I've noticed from those of you who have big platforms or bigger platforms on that is it's more helpful than a lot of the stuff that I post. Like, I do my helpful stuff and then people see it. But like, if you like constantly providing like the helpful value, like people like react and like whatever. But also, like recently, I finally went LinkedIn viral by saying, hey, you know, 4 days in office is not hybrid. That's the tweet. Ah, man, you should have seen them comments. If I had time, if I go find it while like I let her talk, like we can just laugh at it online. I had to block somebody, because he's very passive aggressive. And instead of me acting like it's Twitter, I just decided to block Buddy.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I definitely don't think so. I used to post like a lot more often, but I've slowed down, and I only post when I feel it in my heart that I need to say something. The people need to hear this. And so I'll post them. But I think the main thing that I've been doing is just kind of commenting for reach, trying to use my platform so that other people can see other job opportunities, because I think that that's really important right now. So that's kind of what's been helping me. But
give me her, Christy. Okay, I got you.
I've been doing that and just trying to do my best to make people aware. And that was one of the reasons why I started Give Me Hire Christy, because a lot of people didn't have access to LinkedIn, and I did it for access. And so I brought those jobs over that I was seeing that I didn't need, because I am a recruiter and I have a role, but I'm connected with all of these other recruiters who are in my network sharing roles. So I was like, hey, why not put this on Instagram, put this on TikTok so that people could see it? But also, we're getting to the point to where you just applying for the role isn't enough. So need that LinkedIn now so that you could connect with that recruiter or that person that is hiring, that hiring manager, and try to get your foot in the door that way, because we need that little extra step now. So I would suggest people.
Definitely. All right, so look, I'm finna throw you one of the things that I constantly tell people about, and you might have a difference of opinion in this.
Okay.
But when you're looking for, we'll start like this. Do you type in anything like in the quotation marks for aspiring when you're trying to like source for talent?
No.
That's what I figured. So let's talk about what are you looking for when it comes to profiles? Like how does like somebody take, you know, their profile from zero to hero when it comes to like LinkedIn?
Mm-hmm. I'm looking for a complete profile that highlights metrics, skills, and accomplishments. That is going to be the main thing. Something that we use is LinkedIn Recruiter. People may have heard of LinkedIn Recruiter. If you're a recruiter, you may have heard of LinkedIn Recruiter. But it's the recruiter portion of LinkedIn. And we're able to search there different keywords that we're looking for to find profiles within LinkedIn. And so that's why it's super important for you to have your profile completely filled out to the T, but make sure also that it is filled out with some of those truthful skills. If you don't know how to code, don't put you know how to code in C#. And I'm looking for somebody to code in C#, but I talk to you, you don't know how to code in C#. But yes, I'm looking for just a complete profile. And I think, you know, some things to kind of put, if you are looking to transition into a new role, then you could put something, you can put the actual role that you're looking to get into and maybe just put multiple roles. Or I always suggest my clients, when I'm speaking with clients, to put looking to transition to project manager as like your headline or something like that. So aspiring, maybe not so much, but
yeah. Yeah, I have people that do that, and I'm like, nobody's searching for that. Like the other Sunday, I was like, just put, like you said, put the titles, and then make sure on your profile that you're exhibiting, like you're working towards those titles. Because some people have given these people that are trying to break into these different roles bad advice, trying to make them feel bad, saying, oh, you're a fraud, you're not really a so-and-so. It was a person who hadn't even been recruiting long enough giving bad advice on Twitter one day, and I was like, nah. I quoted her tweet and said, nah, keep doing it. Because I'm like, no, they need the visibility regardless if, you know, they're right for the role. They might, that's a warm connection that they've built with their recruiter, and they may know somebody. And this is also something too that I try to do most of the time. If I don't feel insulted by whatever the recruiter reached out to me about, I tend to, like, they'll send me an email, I tend to probably say, you know, I'm not interested at this time. Or if I ask them a little bit about the role and I'm not interested, I say, you know, I may know some people in my network or whatever. So I just try to, hey, you know, if I can scratch your back, you scratch mine or whatever. What do you feel about that? Like, kind of like, do, we'll put it like this. What are your do's and don'ts when it comes to applicant or looking for a role communications on LinkedIn, as far as, like you said earlier, hey, we ain't got to respond back to y'all. You know, what do you say? Like kind of like cover, like, you know, how should they approach you? Or, you know, simple ways, because I tell people all the time, hey, like one guy showed me, he sent the recruiter a whole bunch of stuff trying to get a reply. I said, hey, yeah, she probably ain't responding to that, dog. Like, like getting to the point, and tell her what you did, just be nice about it, and, you know, she'll probably like respond or try a different way. So yeah, like, what are your, like, your do's and don'ts when it comes to that? Because a lot of people still are not just leveraging what they have on LinkedIn. And I tell them this all the time. Like you said, it's not enough to apply. And for the people that's trying to break in, unfortunately, there have been, now granted, I want to also tell these people this, the layoffs that we've been seeing in bigger tech companies, these are not the only tech companies. Matter of fact, there are other companies that have tech roles that people aren't looking into that are hiring people. But I say to say this, you will be going up against some of these people for these future roles. So you'll have to figure out a way to at least get your name called to get screened. And some people aren't even getting that. So, yeah, I'm going to put the floor on you, or the light on you, and let you go ahead and, you know, break that down.
Of course. Of course. First off, I just wanted to say that it's absolutely true. There are other industries that are still hiring. I've been encouraging the clients that I speak with to look into retail. You know, Nike's still hiring for tech roles, right? Our beauty industry, MAC, Sephora, they have product managers, right, that you could work for. And also hospitality, restaurant industry. They have technical talent sources in those spaces as well. So definitely something to look into. When it comes to messaging, I want to start with the don'ts first, because I see a lot of those, especially when I have my messages open. So do not send me, hey, here's my resume. Do you have a job for me? Don't send me that. I need more context. Who are you? You know, what is the role that you're looking for? Did you see something on the career site that you want to apply for, and you want more context for it? Maybe you want a direct contact for it. Send me that job ID. I just need a little bit more than that. So I've got that. And I've also gotten, are you hiring? Maybe not. I don't know how to like respond to that. You know, some messages that are, also a don't. A long story, a book. Don't send me that. I don't have the time to read it. I have a whole bunch of messages and I just don't have the time to all go through it all the time. Now, I've also gotten some messages. I may do a post. I did a post about how everything happens for a reason. And, you know, I was rejected from this job, but I end up getting this job. And so I'll get some long posts where people are just thanking me, telling me about their story. I'm like, okay, those are a little bit more sentimental. And so, you know, that's fine. But if you're coming to me to get a job, I don't need three paragraphs. What I would love to see and what's easy to respond back to is being very concise. Tell me who you are, a little bit about your backstory, like what qualifies you for that role. Oh, I've been coding in C# for this long, or, you know, whatever it is that qualifies you for that role. And then from there, hey, I actually was looking at this role. Here's the link or the job ID. Did you have time to chat? Did you have 15 minutes to chat? I would love to talk more. Or did you have some time for me to tell you a little bit more about myself in detail? Now, those messages are good. Short, concise, maybe about this long. And that's it. Like, that's all we need. And so if I'm able to help you with a role that I have, then I'll help you. Or I might tell you like, oh, I'm looking for someone maybe that is a little bit more senior, or I'm looking for this or looking for that. Or I'm like, hey, I'm not the person for this role, but, you know, I see that you sent this job ID. I can see that the recruiter for this role is so-and-so. Try connecting with them on LinkedIn. And sending them a message, just same message, and hopefully that will help. So if I'm not able to help you, I'm always willing and open to point you in the right direction. But the message has to be, it's got to be right.
Yeah, I, you know, some people don't even know how to be polite about it. Like, at least you can say, hey, how you doing this morning? How you doing today? Blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Like you said, short and sweet, to the point. Mm-hmm. Now, here's a thing, and I talk about this in my ebook. A lot of people don't do this, and this pisses me off. And I'm gonna ask you, does this piss you off? It's like they try to get noticed when somebody say, hey, you know, I'm hiring for a role, blah blah blah. Either sometimes they'll put the email on there and sometimes they won't, but these people just come in interested, right? Mm-hmm. So mind you, sometimes these posts would have like hundreds of comments, and so mm-hmm. everybody's saying interested. How do you think you're gonna stand out from that? Whereas maybe you go send them an email or an email and actually do what you did. Like I did that, it's in my ebook, but years ago, where mm-hmm. They said, you know, interested in sending me an email. And I send them an email, pretty much all the stuff that you said in a like concise format. And then, you know, they end up getting me an interview. Mm-hmm. But I think that's one of the things right there is like execution, like people just not paying attention. It's like mm-hmm. kind of what I tell people all the time about. It's trends are like, it's not as much gatekeeping now. There's so many different learning platforms, but when everybody's doing the same thing and you don't have the experience, it's hard to stand out. So you have to figure out a way to stand out.
Right, right. So I don't see a problem with commenting something like that underneath the post, only because it does like, when I post something like, hey, I'm looking for a software engineer, 2+ years of experience, and someone says interested or hey, I'm interested, whatever they say, I'm going to go look at their profile. So even though they're not saying anything that's making them stand out, I'm going to look at their profile, doing a quick skim, seeing what the qualifications are. And if they meet the qualifications, then I'll run with them. If they don't, then they don't. But that in addition to them sending an email will be great. That's one of the tips that I get. And we want to really talk about making yourself stand out, being able to comment underneath these posts so that people can see you. Because at the end of the day, I'm going to see the comment. I'm going to click on a profile. I'm going to look. If it's a fit, it's a fit. If it's not, then it's not, you know? And so maybe a little bit more than interested, or maybe type something out.
That's why I'm just like, you know,
yeah.
Like, funny that you say about profiles, right? And coming from a recruiter, and I know you probably don't have no bias in this because, you know, you're a Black woman, because it's so different for you. There's this thing that people talk about, right? You know, picture, no picture on LinkedIn. They kind of judge, you know, how many times they get approached by recruiters or anything, if they take their picture off versus when they have it. You know, what are your thoughts on that?
I absolutely think you should have a picture up. I think it makes the profile, again, I need the profile to be complete. And I can see, so if you maybe didn't have your profile picture showing for security reasons, like you don't want to be, you can only see it if you're connected with someone, that's totally fine. But I absolutely think that you should have a profile picture up, and it should be a very, something that approaches, appeals us to your profile.
Right. Yeah, I tell people, like sometimes people think they need to have like a professional picture, you know. I was trying to get out of here, shout out to Afrotech, but I'm like, truth be told, you just get an iPhone and get like on a neutral color or something like that and just take a selfie, but it look decent and just have that as your profile.
Just do your hair, and I put my phone up on my thing, and I was just like, that's it. It is, just has to be something professional and, not professional, but just like not revealing or anything like that. And just a headshot, something that we
can people see. Be doing the most with their profiles. I didn't see it, you know. What about, cause like this is some of the advice I got early on. Like, what about, is it a added little cherry on top when they got like a good little banner on their page?
Yeah. So I was always taught and told, so it's different. So I feel like when you start working for a company, I have Microsoft up just because, you know, I'm trying to attract talent to the company. But right. I've always been told to have something unique about yourself in the banner picture. So before that, I had Dallas up. Right. I had the Dallas skyline up because
that's what I had.
Unique and special to me, or some people may have themselves hiking. That's something unique and special to them. So something that shows a little bit of personality if you're not currently at a job or if you don't want to like showcase your job on your background.
Dope.
Also wanted to talk about being sensitive to recruiters as well. I know we talked about messaging. But I wanted to tell y'all about the story where Microsoft went through their first round of layoffs in January. And someone sent me a message and was telling me, hey, you know, can you get me connected with a recruiter for a software engineering role? And so I immediately responded because it was a rough day. Literally, we were sitting there staring at our computers, you know, waiting to see if we were going to get an email. And I responded to the candidate and let them know like, hey, you know, unfortunately, Microsoft is actively doing layoffs right now. You know, can we chat later? And he sends me a message with the link to the job and was like, oh, hey, can you connect me? And I had to block that candidate. I'm like, I understand that. There are a lot of people, a lot of job seekers out there that are looking for jobs right now. But you have to be respectful when it comes to sensitive situations like that. What was wrong with sending me the message the next day or, you know, within 2 days after, especially if you're seeing all of this on your timeline? And I know some people may be numb to it because they've been out of a job for a while and they're actively looking as well. But I'm just like, we have to be sensitive to what recruiters are going through, especially recruiters, because the talent acquisition space has been getting eaten up when it comes to these layoffs. We're usually some of the first to be laid off or to be considered for layoffs when it comes to that, because if there is no hiring, there are no recruiters. There's no need for recruiters. So as you're reaching out and if you see that a company is facing a layoff, I will say just be very sensitive to that recruiter and maybe not expect just a quick response. Or if someone tells you they're actively going through it right now, to maybe just chill out for a little bit.
Yeah, funny that you said that, because I actually, after I finished my interview last year with Microsoft, that I didn't get selected for. But anyway. Still a good experience overall. I was working with another recruiter, and it was like before I stepped into another offer, but I had a friend that does a similar role for another big tech company for something that they was kind of looking for. Like, think they was looking at me for, and I was like, nah, I haven't been down this road before. This is not for me. And I had kind of connected them to, and unfortunately they were a person that was affected by the layoffs. And I was like, dang, man, I just was like, you know, trying to help the company out and that person, like getting them a solid lead. You know, I know a person that'd be a good hire. So it's definitely right. It's like, people do need to be a little bit more conscientious when they're reaching out. Because I think I made a post about that too. It's like, if they're always the first people to go, then how will you like find this talent? Like, you know, I definitely don't really like that. Oh man, I need to get some music like Joe Budden got. We made the podcast be a little sad a little bit. oh man. And I had something in my mind that I was going to ask you relative about LinkedIn profiles. Mm-hmm. I know one thing I was going to ask you.
Yeah.
And, we'll go back to the pictures. The reason why I tell people they need a picture is, like you said, kind of know who the person is, how they look. And over the last 3 years, there's been a rise of people doing interviews as that person. So companies are kind of leery of that now. Like, hey, if I don't know how you look and you never on camera nothing like that, I'm probably not like going to offer you or even like fool with you for that fact right there. I've seen it happen in a couple of companies. I think I was on leave one time. My old manager was like, yeah, we have to let this dude go because he wasn't the person that interviewed. And that's one of those things that I'm seeing. And one of the things that I preach too about profiles now, and you can tell me, like I said, people want to get noticed, right?
Yeah.
And they want to, you know, hopefully a recruiter sees them. So I always tell people, all right, if you're trying to go over here, try to at least get you about 500 connections with those people in the industry you're looking to get into. Comment a lot, especially on feather rufflers and everything else, like comment. Put a nice thought-provoking comment on it. You never know who's gonna like it, who's gonna follow you from there. Like, just engage. Like, that's one of the ways where I tell people is like how to grow yourself and have organic like network on there. What else would you add to that simple yet effective strategy?
Yeah, I think you covered it. Being able to just be sure to comment on some of the. If someone's hiring for a job that you're interested in, I would also say a good connection strategy whenever you are first starting off your profile, you're trying to get to those 500 connections, is connect with people that are in the roles that you want to be in, that are in the roles that your dream job, those people that are in those roles. And I would also say, let's take it a step further. Let's ask for coffee chats with those people. Because one thing that I've learned and one thing that I did whenever I was looking to transition over into recruiting from Google, I talked to every person that did the same role that I did that was in recruiting. And as I was talking to them, learning about their journey and their strategies, I was picking up keywords that would help me during the interview process. Like, oh, so this part of our old job helps with the new job. And so that is some of the key things that I picked up. So I always feel like when you do a coffee chat, you sit there, you let that person talk, and you pick up, you listen to key things. And if you do plenty of those with a bunch of project managers at Google, when it's time for you to do the interview, you'll know some of those keywords that you need to say as you're talking. And so I would do that as you're starting to build your network up.
I definitely agree. I just like the solid vibe. People ask me, hey, I want to do this. What should I do? I said, it's going to get repetitive, but it's super simple yet effective. Find those people on LinkedIn. Because I had a guy I worked with before, but he wasn't a constant client of mine. And he had made this broad spread approach on the post and saying, hey, I'm looking for people that's in networking and blah, blah, blah. I said, hey, why don't you just search for network engineers on LinkedIn and reach out to them that way versus trying to see who's going to see this post and respond back.
Right.
And take it a step further, like you said, is like you say, hey, what skills I need to learn in order to be able to land some of these roles? And if it's a company you're really interested in, or they do similar things to the roles you've been seeing, they're going to give you solid enough advice to where you'll know exactly what you need to work on.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually your number will be called and you'll land something eventually if you do it that way. Cause you're getting it from the horse's mouth. You ain't, all these people who post these, oh, here are 50 platforms you can learn cybersecurity from. And that's an issue too. I don't have an issue with the post per se. The mm-hmm. issue is when new people are trying to get into certain industries and you have influencer like people that post so much different stuff, they're getting overwhelmed and they're not really learning what they should need to know because they're trying to dib and dab over here, and they don't know how to focus. So hey, if that's you and you watching this right now, go ahead and book a consultation with me. I'll help you focus. We'll get somebody over there to you. But that's one of the big issues that I'm seeing that they're having now, because everybody's telling them everything about, oh, you should learn this, you should learn this. And then they show me what type of role they want to get. I'm like, this don't line up with that. Mm-hmm. I was like, how many people have you talked to that's doing this role instead of like, oh, I'm trying to, you know, it'll be, it may just say somebody want to do compliance work. Oh, yeah, I'm studying for this CH or whatever, right? Studying for the CEH, $500, $600 test, but hadn't really learned some of these frameworks you need to do a compliance role. I'm like, learn the skills. Certs come later.
Yeah, I'll be sending people to you.
Oh, yeah, I know, man. I'm working on that referral. Matter of fact, shout out to Ashley. Ashley reached out to me. I think you sent her my way. And I think I texted her back today. I got to see if she texted me back. I'll be so
busy. I'm waiting on my Chick-fil-A card. Or Chipotle.
You did tell me that. You did tell me that. I got you. I got a lot of people. But I think the last thing, this kind of be a joke. It kind of be funny. But how, and I want to, and I guess maybe, because I think everybody's people, right? Everybody has biases. How much stock do you put into candidates based on their presentation on webcam? Like when they're interviewing, right? Like how much stock goes in there? Like, I don't really care about, your background. Like if you got this mic or crap like I got, like, I would just care. Like, at least like you decided to go to a quiet place, probably be up against a wall. I don't care if you got a webcam or a camera like I got, but like, have your hair brushed, comb, decent clothes. Like, you ain't got to wear no suit. Like back in the day, see, y'all lucky. Back in the day, I was wearing suits. And see, I had a combo. I had two suits. And then there'd be different suits every time I wore a different tie or a different shirt with them. See what I'm saying? I was wearing suits to go get denied for these jobs. I ain't got to do that no more, man. For real, man.
I've been doing it for a long time.
Do you put stock into that? Like when the applicant doesn't necessarily, I wouldn't say, okay, let me rephrase it because this might sound better because somebody might say, oh, he's so judgy. If they take the time to at least have like a decent area set up or have a quiet place that they can do, do you value that as like, hey, they're trying to show that, you know, they value us meeting with them or meeting us? Do y'all value that? I don't want people to think I'm talking about, you know, you got to have a nice backdrop and all. So I'm talking about like the value of like just taking pride in yourself and that, hey, you're going to potentially interview with this company that may want to hire you.
Okay. I don't look into it too much only because my interactions with the candidates is the first initial phone call and then the prep call. But when we're on the prep call, it's my responsibility to make sure that I tell the candidate, you know, how the interviews are going to be ran. And to go from there. And so I always say, you know, like you said, we don't wear suits anymore. So I was like, you know, you can come very casual. I know when I went to one of my interviews, when it was in person at Google, it was athletic leisure. And I asked one of my friends that worked there, I was like, hey, how does this look? And she was like, you're overdressed. And so I had to change it up. So usually, you know, when you're interviewing, I was like, you know, just come very casual as if you were going to be working, not in your pajamas, but a collared shirt or just like a shirt that you have on. It's going to be fine. Again, these were software engineers. So they're a little bit, the personality of a software engineer is a little bit different than any other type of industry that someone is going into. But I think that it is my responsibility to you know, let them know, like, to talk through the problem, to make sure that you're in a quiet environment, that you're focused and that you're able to hear, that the interviewers can see you clearly. It is recommended that you have your camera on, even though it's not required, it's recommended. And things like that. So,
yeah. And I always say,
those are all good points that you said. But also think we got to take into consideration that people are working from home, especially when you have mothers that may have kids in the background.
Oh yeah. Mine luckily being quiet right now. So I definitely, that's what I'm saying. I ain't worried about that, because kids going to be kids. I done been interviewing with people before, and their kid didn't walk in the room and say, hey, no, I'm doing an interview right now. So I definitely know kids going to be kids. But I always tell people, like, hey, have your notebook and let them know that you got the notebook. Regardless if they ever see it again, it's just going to show that you came prepared. It's like the little things. It's like, you go ahead.
I was going to say, when I interview, or one of my biggest tips is I always bring a notebook. And when I'm going through the interview process, someone asks me a question, I'm like, oh, okay, thank you so much for that question. I'm just going to write my thoughts down. And I actually write stuff down.
Yeah,
jot down some stuff so that I can say it. I'm like, okay, this, this, and this. And I have it in order of what I was writing. Now, don't take forever.
Right here, I use to keep on task, but I use in an interview sometimes, like if they ask me some or diagramming something out, I know I can erase it and stuff like that, and I just use it. So that's one of the things I do, because it does help me out. So I'm with you on that one. And some I do that I'm probably not supposed to do, but helps. I have a program that, like, I can record, like, you know, my calls and stuff like that. So I do that because it helps me write, like, when I do, if I really do like them, I'll write a good thank you follow-up. And it helps me remember, like, some key points they said. And I was like, ooh, I'm going to touch on that. Send it back. And listening to your interviews is crucial, because a lot of times people think they're doing good in interviews. And this is including me. I've listened to some of my recent interviews. I'm talking about, like, last year when I started, I need to start an interview. I was like, yeah, I was shaky right there. I wasn't as good. And I was like, that's sometimes the only way you're going to know how you're doing. And that's why I also do the interview prep with people, because it's like that good fine medium, you know, when you're interviewing, like, how long you take to answer a question versus, like, doing too much and not doing enough. And I try to help them with that medium, you know, even the simple ones that people get, like, hung up on, like, oh, tell me about yourself, why you wanted to work here. And I don't hate this question because I know how to answer it, but a lot of people don't. When you say, oh, well, tell me about your strengths and weaknesses. Yeah. And I catch people talking about their own internal weaknesses. I was like, no, direct it to your weakness that's related to the job. Saying, oh, well, the job says you need, you know, 5 experience doing this, but I only had 3 experience doing that. Like, direct it that way. Be self-aware. Like, I always teach people about being self-aware. And that's a big one. You'll be surprised who's not self-aware.
I love that. I think the answer that I always give or tell people to give for biggest weakness is, oh, you know what? Sometimes I think I'm superwoman and I can do everything, and I'm always taking on a lot of tasks. And, you know, I think one thing that I can work on is kind of asking for help, asking for my partners and my people around me to pitch in, because I'm not great at everything. And I know other people have great achievements that they can help me with in this project. So,
right. And I just thought about, I forgot who told us this or something. It was hilarious though. Hey, when in doubt and y'all really just freeze up, man, just say, it depends. Hey, it depends, man. And if you can finesse that, if they laugh enough, you might not get a job, but they're going to remember you. That'd be funny. But yeah, that's the other thing, the part that a lot of people don't focus on when it comes to interviews. Sometimes people be very solid and technical, but their fit is bad because they aren't focused on the soft skill part of what they would need to do their role. And that's one part that always gets people sometimes suicide. You know, I've experienced, well, in my case, it was a different of saying, hey, you the best, you know, most qualified, but we're going to pass. That's some BS right there. But people do run into that sometimes, and it sucks. But let's get into, let me see. We had a couple of questions in here, so let's get in these questions. All right. So this user not found says, do resume formats really matter all that much? I'll let you go.
Yeah, I would say so. Yes. So there are certain resumes, like you don't need your picture on there. You don't need a super colorful resume. It doesn't have to have all the lines and squiggles. It could just be what you think is very basic is very good, especially when it comes to coming through one of our systems and us looking at it and being able to read it. I think that it doesn't have to be super fancy.
Right. And I'll agree on that, too. And actually, this wasn't a question, but since he asked this, or he or she, I don't know what they are. Don't want to offend anybody. But I hate, and not I don't hate because I'm not a recruiter, right? But I'll give you my thought process behind this. A lot of people that do resumes, sometimes they try to focus so much on, oh, you need to do this so you can make it ATS friendly, which, okay, fine. However, most of the time, recruiters still review your resume when you get denied.
Right.
So that's why I don't like that, because that guy I blocked one time came at me with some advice I did not ask him for. And I just ignored him then, too. Mm-hmm. But I focus on, hey, I know recruiters got 6, 7, maybe 8 seconds most of the time when they look at a resume. I need to add a thing short and concise and try to market this person's best skill set to these recruiters. And that's what I focus on. I don't focus on, oh, I'm finna use this tool and take all these keywords and put them in here. Now, I will do that if the person's skill set fits that. Because some people throw the things in there, but they don't know how to do the stuff they got in their resume.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm big on that. I'm big on not embellishing to the sense where you just flat out lie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And because that make you look real bad. They might, you know, recruiters might decide, hey, they come across in here no more and don't nobody talk to these dudes because they'd be lying. I don't know what y'all process is, but I was like, you better, like for me, even as being a decade in, I'll tell a recruiter or even when they first register me, you know, hey, this don't fit my skill set or I don't know how to do that. I'm honest because they'll either say, okay, that's cool. That's fine. We can work with that. Versus now I done oversold myself and I'm, you know, I'm over there. I've oversold myself before, and that's why I tell people don't do it. Like, just be honest. Somebody gonna rock with your skill set.
Yeah, and sometimes people aren't expecting you to know everything. We're not. We're looking for the best match as possible. Now, when you actually talking to a recruiter and they're trying to get you in front of the hiring manager, that may be a little bit different because the hiring manager may actually want that particular skill set. So be careful. But being upfront and honest, I think that there's a position for everyone. And you don't gotta, if you don't know how to do that just right now, you can always practice, look it up, research it. You know, again, doing those coffee chats and asking people that actually are working in that role, working on that product or that tool, how they use it, or just listening to keywords and trying to figure it out. But have some type of knowledge within that that area.
Yeah, definitely. And another thing I always say to recruiters, because I think one of the issues that applicants have that aren't seasoned yet, they don't really know how to navigate a job description, right? So a title may be one thing, but I'm reading it and it says something else. So that's when I'll say, what does the hiring manager really want? And they'll typically say, oh, well, they want this and this. I'm like, all right, cool, bet. Well, I'll be interested. If not, then I'll go on by my way because I'm like, this is, y'all not finna play me. It's like 3 roles in 1. Nope.
Yeah, that's definitely something to be careful of. I think sometimes job descriptions could be really tricky. That's why, you know, on the Get Me Hired Christy platform, one of the things that I go through, we go through the job description so that you can know that your transferable skills are real. But you have to break them down, and they're not always the best written type of job description. So you got to make sure that you're not going to be overworking yourself or, you know, that you really understand what they're asking for. And sometimes it may take a phone call. It may take you talking to the recruiter for that initial phone call to get more of a breakdown of what the job really is.
Oh, this made me just think about something. Well, two things. I'm going to tell the listeners. Hey, guys, y'all that's watching, you know, we will be bringing, I'm saying we, like I'm going to be the one doing it, but we're going to bring Get Me Higher Christy to YouTube very soon. I've already sent her some videos of people doing exactly what she do. That's doing and a lot of views. I'm like, you already do this on TikTok. But number two is I just thought about something because some people still do this. And it's probably more so with like some of the agencies or those contractors, right?
Mm-hmm.
You'll send me your resume and then they'll start adding crap and changing your resume.
Oh, Lord.
Right.
Yeah. I've had that happen. I think one of the times that I was doing an interview for a contracted role for Google, the client is Google. They like added some stuff in. And I'm like, I don't know about that. I will tell you now, I don't do that. I don't add nothing to your resume. I might give you suggestions, you know, how to fix it up, but I'm not, I hate resumes. I wanted to say something very controversial. And that is, I think LinkedIn profiles are more important than resumes.
You know what? You're not wrong. You're not wrong in that assessment. Like my basic advice for people is like, look, hey, what I'm gonna put on this resume, we're gonna put the same stuff you're gonna put on your LinkedIn. That's how I go about it, to be honest.
And me being a sorcerer, the first thing I look at is your LinkedIn, and then I ask for you to send your resume over, you know? So the way that I'm gonna reach out to you is something that's gonna qualify you from your LinkedIn. And your resume is just like, this matches up.
Mm-hmm. So Robinson had a question right here. We kind of covered this a little bit earlier, but they want to know, can you talk more about compensation, how to negotiate? I guess this is a loaded question because we can't really tell you what you should ask for when negotiating compensation. Because that's really kind of based on an individual need and also knowing your leverage, your experience, how good is your interview, like you said, the company. A lot of times now with this, what, salary pay transparency, which is hogwash when it comes to like New York and
Washington.
California.
Mm-hmm.
I seen then somebody posted y'all today talking about the salary is from $50,000 to $999,000.
I've seen some wide ranges too. And it's just like, go to Glassdoor, go to
Vine, Fishbowl, levels.fyi, salary.com. I try to tell people try to find five different sites and then average them out, like to at least know the average. So if they trying to offer you at least under the average, I'm like, nah, that's it. They tripping. Because what I've also seen with helping clients that are younger, that don't typically have like the experience, like, I think one of my guys, he just got another vulnerability management position and he is 20 or something like that. Companies do this little slick stuff where since you so young or technically don't have the experience, they don't want to pay you what they would pay somebody that has technically like more experience or not even much experience, but they're older and they've been through the things. They'll pay them at least average and they'll try to pay the person under average. And I don't like that. So I always tell them, all right, cool. This is what we're going to do. We're going to use this as a paid internship. We're going to get our bread. And within 6 months to a year, we're probably going to be gone because you'll go somewhere else that's going to actually pay you what you want. Versus trying to undercut me because you just feel like, oh, I should be happy to get this much.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not really too sure about the salary portion since I just bring the candidates in. And that's why I choose the sourcing part, right? Because I don't want to argue about no money with no candidate because I wouldn't want to argue with me about my money. And so to the question, I would say always negotiate. And it depends.
Yeah, I would say always negotiate. And then in here, so this is not a hot take, but here is why, even though I tell somebody, oh, you don't need a degree to get into tech or whatever, here's where a degree can benefit you when it comes to negotiations. Because sometimes they'll assess what you're coming in as, like I already mentioned, when you interview, but then look at, okay, they got some of these certs, they got this level of education, they've been doing it for X amount of years. Okay, this is what the peers in the role that they'll do make. And so you'll possibly be around this range a little bit more. They'll do that. So, because a lot of times they have to justify to HR why they want to pay you this much. So if you do have some of those credentials, it does help you out in negotiations. So that's why I do tell people, you don't need a degree, but it can't hurt you in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think this one is for you.
No degree, no problem. Is this correct position?
Avelia, I think. Avela. I don't know. I don't want to butcher your name, but I'm hoping it's either Avelia. Does current position give you a work-life balance suitable for further skill growth?
Oh, like, can I go to school and do my job?
I don't know. I wish I could go here. Because I'm kind of confused at it as well, far as, like, work-life balance and further skill growth.
Okay. I can answer it the best way I can, and hopefully I get it right for you. But, yes, I have a lot of work-life balance. I do my work. I do my work, and then I log off. There's not, like, a lot of outside or overtime that I have to do, and I don't put too much on myself. I do my projects. I try to be most efficient during the time that I have for work. And then, you know, I cut it short. And then I would say my opportunities for growth have been, you know, get me hired, Christy. If I wanted to take a class or, you know, go back to school, I could part-time and do that. I feel like I have a great work-life balance to where I'm able to do that. But on my off time, I work on Get Me Hired, Christy. I work on videos for you guys and trying to find different roles to keep you posted so that you guys could stay good in the job market.
Mm-hmm. We got another hot take for you right here.
I'm ready.
How do y'all feel about Candace working more than one role remotely? I'm like, as long as it don't interfere with what you do, I don't really care.
I feel like you was gonna say that. this is me personally. This is not me talking on behalf of, you know, any company. I don't feel like you should be working multiple jobs. I feel like if you're gonna work hard and you're gonna come over to tech, and really be invested and learn and grow, then I think you should have a good work-life balance. Do your work and go live your life instead of doing your work and then going to do some more work. That's just me personally. I've always been this person to where I feel like as we're growing up, especially within the Black community, we've seen people have multiple jobs back to back, making ends meet. Now that we've gotten to this place to where, okay, we're starting to make a little money. You know, we don't have to work two jobs, all of this stuff. Why you want to add another job on there?
So I'll say from experience, if the other one, if it's low maintenance, like at a time, I did this before, and I think I still was working less than 40 combined with two. So I would say if it doesn't affect nothing, if it's low maintenance, you got an individual contributor, you don't have all these means, you're remote for both, and you can handle it and you still have a work-life balance, it's cool. If you don't have much of a work-life balance and you're just doing it, hey, I want to pay off, you know, some debt and then stop, cool. Do what you got to do to get ahead, you know. In this day and age, with how things looking, I'm not mad at it. Companies go out and buy multiple companies and they get their increase their revenue. But, you know, if you like a consultant or something, you're on multiple projects, but you're not getting multiple pay. So, like, I'm just for, like, doing what's best for you because of we've seen, like, we in the DFW area. Now, houses are starting to come back down a little bit. They come back down because California came here and messed it up. Mm-hmm. And people realize, people that stayed here already was like, nah, we ain't finna be finessed. So it's like nothing is going down, but groceries, like I said on that TikTok, them groceries is what's really killing people. So I'm for it, but just do it in reason. Like don't go, if you got to go on a site, don't go on site and work your second job on site. Like somebody did that for, what's it, Experian or something like that, Equifax. Somebody got fired for doing that stupid stuff. Mm-hmm. So please don't do that.
And be careful. See. Make sure it's not a conflict of interest between the two jobs as well.
In the words of the best players, it's only cheating if you get caught. Oh, man.
This Rose one for you. Says,
how do you land a SOC analyst position after college? That's a loaded question. And good thing you asked that. I recently did a presentation to the University of Dallas titled The Day in the Life of a SOC Analyst. And I do a presentation on pretty much like what a SOC analyst is and what do they do with their day-to-day responsibilities. So that'll give you an understanding of that. So go watch that presentation. And then I also have on my page, how to get into cybersecurity in 2023 with no experience presentation, went down the list and kind of show you how to find the skills. Some of the things that me and her talked about today with LinkedIn, reaching out to people, having those chats, all that stuff is right there. So that'll help you out more than me just trying to give you a quick answer right now. And it's plenty of stuff you can write down. And if you need any more help, just book with me. Let's see. Who is this? What are other skills to learn to take for a person who has the associate degree in cybersecurity going for the bachelor's? I don't know, because I don't know what you want to do. And so that's one of the things, my qualms that I do have with school is like the degree is like the umbrella, but people don't know what they want to do. They're just doing it because it has like cybersecurity or IT or whatever attached to it. So I would say explore what you like about cybersecurity and see what roles match up with that first. And then that's how you figure out what skills you need to learn. If not, you will not know and you will be confused because you'll be like, man, I can't land nothing. And then you'll talk to me. I'm like, oh, well, you don't have this, this, and this. And that's probably why. Can you review, walk through a LinkedIn profile live? If so, can it be mine? If Kerwin Trim, if you are still on here now, put your link up. But we can do one. We'll actually have, well, ooh, perfect. This might be a good thing. We're going to have Christy review my LinkedIn profile. Let's see. Practice interviewing with someone that you don't know that well. I haven't done that before, but I guess that can work because, you know, when you're interviewing people, you don't know them. So, I'm not mad at that. He said, I've had a bunch of contract recruiters add 5 years of experience I didn't have. and look, a lot of companies now are doing like outsourcing like them background checks. And sometimes they want to, like one time I had to print out like, oh, you was working here and here. Go get this from the work number or whatever they called and actually show I worked these places. Like, so you can sometimes skate around line until you can't.
I might tell you a joke, but I never tell you a lie.
Let's see. Do you guys have any tips for building your LinkedIn platform for an SDR or AE role? Hey, click the link in my description and go ahead and join Course Careers. That's what I'm going to tell you on that one because that's not my forte. Or go check out Take Us a New Black. Check out I'm Just Cyrus. That's what he does. He knows about that. Or go to my guy Antoine Wade at Black Heights on YouTube. He does that too. No, check him out.
I was just saying,
oh yeah, that you did do that. My fault. Why you let me? Do that?
Why you let me glance over? I'll go jump in before you ended it. I was gonna say, make sure you put metrics. Show your metrics through your other roles that you have listed. If you're trying to get this role, it sounds like you're trying to get an SDR role. So metrics is going to be really important when it comes to those types of sales roles. So have those listed.
And I'll say metrics is important for any role. That's how, if you want to show that you did some achievements, I'll tell anybody, I don't care what type of job it is, like showing that stuff so you stand out.
Numbers, percentages, all of that stuff underneath your profile is really good. I always put how many hires I had within that year so that people can see that.
He said, I thought it was a question. Why do some people have jobs I'm interested in and low-key creep on their work history to see what path they took? Hey, free game. A study guide.
And especially if you see somebody that has the same kind of background as you, copy chat.
So remember, she was the one that asked about work-life balance, furthering growth. And so she said, I guess it meant her current position as a recruiter. I asked that when you were all talking about transferable skills. Her skills came from like another role. Mm-hmm. I guess maybe, I don't know if she's saying, does the job allow you to learn new skills or do something else?
Gotcha.
So that's what I thought maybe I was getting from that. Maybe like, you know, career growth, studying and training, okay. Maybe that's what she's referring to.
Yeah. So there is a lot of resources within. If I do have a little bit of downtime, just I'm able to like take other courses. Like there's one course that people have been taking, or I took project management or program management. You could take a course over that. And those things have kind of helped me to look into other areas if I were ever interested in looking into other areas. And also I work on different programs and projects throughout my job as well. So as I'm putting on events, trying to build up pipeline, I have to put together these projects to attract candidates to come and hear about. I put together a panel, right, for candidates to come and hear about a day in the life of a SWE at Microsoft. And so those are kind of projects and different programs that I put together that have helped me kind of grow my skills as a recruiter.
Dope. Kerwin Trim says, what are some roles should a former junior incident manager look to pivot to? Check out my venture cybersecurity career on LinkedIn. That's my LinkedIn learning course. I got a description on there. That possibly can help you figure out what you want to do. Because like I said, I don't know you guys, so I can't tell you what you should do. You might not like doing that. You might want to be more people facing, or maybe you want to pivot to something else. So I guess that would depend on what you like to do. Any boot camps you recommend for software engineering, Christy?
I can't recommend any, unfortunately.
She doesn't have any she want to recommend, guys. Okay, so look, y'all that's still here, shout out to y'all. If y'all still rocking with us, put a 2 in the chat. I'm going to go to my profile, and then we're going to actually look at it since we have a recruiter here. Okay. Here's a question for you real quick. Do you think you hire more candidates internally with the company or externally?
I'm a full external recruiter. So with sourcing, it's usually all external. Like I'm looking for talent externally. The only thing I would say that is slightly internal, I don't know if you guys have heard of a Microsoft Leap program, where you are like contracted working on Microsoft tools and products and stuff like that. And so people from those programs I have worked with to bring into the company on full time. But most of the candidates that I've worked with, if not all, are external candidates. And you have internal recruiters as well, but I'm not one of those.
Dope. So let's see. Okay, perfect. All right. So can you see? Or do I need to zoom in?
Yeah.
If you, all right, if so look, you y'all.
In a little bit.
Yeah,
I got you. But if not, it's okay.
Tell me when to stop.
That's good.
All right, so look, y'all. Y'all getting my LinkedIn profile analyzed by Microsoft Recruiter. And I'd like to also tell you guys, don't follow what I do on my page because I do so many different things. That's the reason why my headings look like this. If I just was a job searcher, it wouldn't be like this. It would be more concise and streamlined to what I want to do.
Mm. Yeah, don't follow mine either. So first thing I'm looking at an appealing, something that is attracting me to the profile is the picture, a nice smile, and then you have a decent background. That's something very unique. It tells about yourself and what you do personally. We love that. For someone that is a job seeker, the difference that you would see on the headline or the heading is that you will have the title of the positions that you're looking to get into, right? Just the titles and maybe the little the slashes. But I think it's important, and I see this a lot when I'm talking to different clients and candidates, mm-hmm. we have to narrow it down. You cannot have everything. I know you sometimes you may have a resume for program management. You may have a resume for cybersecurity. You may have a resume for recruiting. When we're on LinkedIn, we have to, if we're going to pick two, it's got to be something similar around each other, or we have mm-hmm. to try to focus on one because it's going to look just like a lot, and it's going to be hard to pull skills from your project management experience from other jobs that you had and put them into the descriptions underneath each job. So yes, I would say come up with something very creative. One thing that I was taught is something that is going to appeal a recruiter is going to be the headlines. The first thing I'm going to see. So your title, maybe something creative, or something that you do on the side or in your free time.
Right. And I'll give these people some context because they can't see everything because it's me looking at my profile. But what that pencil is on my banner actually says NIR. technically I can just move that, so it'll just be lined up. But anyways, you're right. So when I wanted to pivot out of the last kind of roles I did, I wanted to only get kind of approached for incident response or security operations lead or like level three roles. So that's why SOC lead is the very first thing in the heading. And that's why most of the time I got reached out for roles like that, because I had that in my profile. And that's also what my profile shows. What do y'all think about people that have like a lot of connections? Does it matter to y'all?
I don't think so. I think if you have a lot of connections, usually, or you mean followers or connections? So if you have your profile on a creator profile and you have a lot of followers, I mean, I think that's absolutely good, because there's people that are following you that's willing to like look at your content that you're posting, or the things that you're posting, or some mm-hmm. of the things that you comment on. So that's really good. I don't think that that's a bad thing. And it also just makes your network, makes you more marketable, because we have layoffs all the time. And so you need to have a good network, but make sure you're speaking with your network as well, sending a message, asking how they're doing, telling them happy birthday. I tell everybody happy birthday. And then those usually spark conversations from there as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, I love this part. This is my favorite part. So if y'all get a chance, go look at my features, because my features is fire from all the posts. I usually put my viral posts in the features area, but a lot of things that you've worked on, or if you were on a panel of some sort, I have in there when I got my HR management certification. Like, those are really good things to put in your features. Brag about yourself. I think that's what LinkedIn is for.
Hey, you got to. I love me some me. Yeah, I actually got to change some of mine, because the one from last week I need to put up there. It's a couple of them actually I need to put on here for a feature.
Yeah.
But I kept this up here for real because whoever that was, asked me about SOC analysts. Like, I direct people to this all the time. Like, these questions I have for people, that like some realistic scenarios that they will see in an interview, because that's the hardest part. So, hey man, how do I prepare for this stuff? Because I went in there for one thing and it was something else. So a lot of times when I'm reviewing people's LinkedIns, I'll go see, okay, their activity. And then, you know, sometimes say, oh, they haven't posted in a while. Mm-hmm. So I'll give them some homework, say, hey, let's try for like a post maybe a week or something. Just trying to build that muscle up of them posting. Mm-hmm. And then we'll say, okay, we'll go like for, you know, whatever. Like, so do you view like their post, or do you just keep on scrolling down to their experience and whatever else?
Mm-mm. No, usually I don't review the post.
Okay. This is actually, I got to change this, but because it's kind of out of date. Yeah. But what I would typically put right here, if I want to, is I can put my career achievements that I have right there, or I can make it a section. Like on my resume, I don't have a summary. It just has my name and stuff, career achievements, and technical skills. Then it goes down into like, you know, my roles I've had, mm-hmm. I've held.
I think mine has like what I recruit for. Also the about section, if you're looking, like if you're trying to find a recruiter for a role, their about section most likely will have like what they're recruiting for, and you know, what cities they're looking for and things like that.
Glad you said that too, because when I show people to kind of find recruiters now, I say, hey, go visit their page first and see if they recruit for what they're supposed to be recruiting to, versus, you know, you just send them a cold email. Now, mm-hmm. I do that if I just can't find anybody. I also look for recruiters that are possibly smiling in their pictures, that they mm-hmm. might be nice.
Or if they're active.
Right. Now, this hasn't been updated in a long time.
I'm about to say, because I don't see I need at least 3 bullet points underneath each one.
Yeah, like this stuff is like, oh, this stuff is from probably like 5 years ago. Like, I hadn't put this stuff on here. So if I want, like, this is not what's on my resume currently.
Mm-hmm.
So guys, do as I say, not as I do. Like, for example, this job is not my resume. I'm only been going back like 5 years, because it's like my experience is getting so extensive now. I don't want it to be longer than it has to be.
Right. You don't want that. This company. Yeah. 1 or 2 pages. That's it.
But I got this, my schooling, then I get into that. Then I get into like the skills portion. This is where I always tell people too, is like, hey, y'all want to do this job, but the skills that's on the job description ain't listed over here.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have some of them, and I actually need to come back through and probably add some.
And also this part is really important too, because as we're looking on our side of LinkedIn, we put in these keywords, and mm-hmm. if you have this on your profile, then you pop up.
Yep. So this actually going to make me redo my thing. And okay, so let's talk about this, right? Okay. I don't know now for the recruiter standpoint, it might be different, but maybe for me, if I was a hiring manager or hiring somebody, I would go, because back in the day, people used to have in their resume references available upon request. Well, with LinkedIn, like you said, with it really actually being better than a resume, because digital resume, I'd say, this person got any, you know, recommendations, and who did they come from? And you look at their titles. So like, this is my old manager who's the director now of my old company. I got Dayspring, and you're looking at where they work at. Let's see some other ones I got. But the fact is, these are accurate descriptions of me when people work with me or they either manage me. So I try to tell people, don't sleep on recommendations. Not at all.
Especially if you have somebody, a manager, supervisor that you have a good relationship with and they're on LinkedIn, I definitely think that you should ask for a recommendation if they're willing to send one. There's nothing but advance the profile. If you're going to be asking somebody for a recommendation, usually you had a good relationship with them anyway. So
definitely try to see if I can find a post so we can laugh real quick, because I want your thoughts on it. it should be coming up. I ain't posted that much. Oh, this is the guy I was telling you about, though. Life after layoff, this dude right here. I get tagged in a lot of stuff too. Also, guys, one of my clients did something that really helped him stand out when he started looking for jobs. He had made a video. I didn't tell him to do this. He made an about me video. So on his profile, there was a video about like why he chose to get into cybersecurity and some of his skill sets and all this other stuff. Now, I don't tell people that I always have to do that, but if you do, I don't see how it could hurt you. And here's also an example, guys, since we're already on here, because I think I was talking to Bridgestone for a role last year. That's not a name you hear all the time. Somebody talking about like a tech job, but these companies run on technology and, you know, they're trusted names. Like, people have been using Bridgestone for years. So like, just expand your search too. If you feel like you're not landing anything, like really think about the things in your house that you use or the stores you go to, gas you get, all those type of things. Like those Exxons and Shells and all them, they hire tech people and they pay well too.
Yeah.
This was the guy I was telling about, the 20-year-old with the offer.
That's amazing.
I ain't gonna lie, I've been using ChatGPT to help me with my descriptions and my bios. Oh, here it is right here. So look, I said, I finally feel like Christy. I didn't want a little viral. So remember, like, for example, so if you had a post like this and you said you was hiring for a software engineering role and it got 150 comments that said interested, are you really gonna go to every person on their page?
Yeah.
You dedicated. You're a good
Well, that's the point of me making the post, right? So I'm gonna go through and look at the people that said they're interested and see if they meet the requirements. It's quick though. It's not
I'm trying to see if 150 people all said it. That's what I'm trying to say.
Oh, well, no, I mean, people are saying other things like, oh hey, I have two plus years of experience in this. You know, I am interested in this role. Can you take a look at my profile, or please see my profile? Or, you know, they're not just saying interested, but there are tons of comments. I didn't went through more than 150.
Right. Funny thing
but
is, right.
That's how we find our candidates. And that's also how I find candidates that aren't. That's how you find your underrepresented group, right? Candidates that aren't just going to pop up in the perfect search that you do when you're a recruiter. The perfect search is going to come up to the perfect people that have their perfect profiles and all this stuff. But, you know, you have people saying that they're interested. They may not have the perfect profile or whatever that's making them pop up in a search so that we can reach out to them. But they said they're interested. And I just so happened to look at their profile. I'm like, okay, well, we can work with this. Let's see what happens.
Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is, what I want to talk about this post, because I have a hot take and a little conspiracy theory here about some of these layoffs, right? Mm-hmm. Remember, it was the great resignation over the last 2 years. So everybody was like resigning, quitting, going into tech. And a lot of people was working remotely due to COVID and other things. I think a lot of these layoffs and so many things are happening. One, because maybe, hey, the economy's probably in a little bit of downturn. But two, I think it's a way to kind of reel in some trying to take some of that power back from the employees to go back to the employers. So I make a little people more fearful and try to abide by what the company wants them to do so they don't lose their job. I think that's one of the things, the tactics that's trying to be employed. And that's not me trying to be insensitive as a person who's been laid off before, but I'm just trying to piece together everything about these companies that's did well for years. How could you all of a sudden in a 2-3 year time span decide to just mess up the money or whatever and decide to just, you know, lay people off like that? So that's kind of some of my thinking about it, because sometimes you can't wrap your head around it. And sometimes it don't matter how good or bad of an employee you are. The good people are getting let go with the people who aren't doing nothing. So that's kind of also why my method is like, hey, do what you got to do to survive. You got to work two. Hey, at least you might not get laid off from both. Maybe one, but not two.
I do see that whenever I'm like looking and posting some of the entry level roles, or, you know, the roles where you can use your transferable skills, they have the range or the pay range on there. A lot of the pay ranges are going down. And as you can see, there's not a lot of fully remote roles anymore. There's hybrid, there's on-site, and it's really hard because I would pride myself on like, okay, I'm going to post all remote roles. That way I ain't got to worry about my audience that stays here, they can work at this role. But now it's just like, as I'm looking and I'm getting the jobs ready to post, it's like they're starting to get very tailored to location and more of a hybrid role.
And that's the benefit. Let me just stop sharing real quick. And that's kind of like the benefit that helped people. Let's say, for instance, like over the last 2 years, if I was in my hometown of Shreveport, right? Being able to work remote would have gave me access to a bunch of companies that I wouldn't have access to because I didn't stay in Dallas at the time. Right. Now those people are probably not going to have access to some of these roles because they don't stay in the region. So they're getting X'd off just because of that. And mind you, some of these companies don't even need you to go in and do the role. They just want you to go. They literally just want some people to go. And that's one of the sucky parts of, like, for me, like I talked about my resignation videos, like, hey, my team is in Ohio. I was in Plano. None of them are there. Nobody on my team is in Plano. So why am I, you know, had to be stuck in traffic and go into office for what? People in there coughing, seeing people not washing their hands. When, hey, I could be more effective and have most of my work done once I just come into my office right here and do it. Like, so all those things, it's a control thing, especially from the old companies, the old financial companies. They are definitely leading the charge of saying, oh, remote work is bad and all these other things. Like we said, mind you, groceries went up, gas still going up, all these things. So you want them to come in. You don't give some people a bonus. You don't give them an increase in compensation, but you want them to come in because the entitlement of saying, oh, you should just be happy to work here is what, you know, is given right now, you know, to use your phrase. That's what it's given. And that's going to work or not. Like for me, I wouldn't mind if I had to go in the office if it's, you know, essential for what I had to do. But at the same time, based on what I do outside of work, remote is the best option for me. I tell the young people, hey, if you can get your stripes first and, you know, do that hybrid role, right? You got to earn your stripes. A lot of people are trying to dictate, oh, I want to do remote, but they ain't got no skin in the game. When you become a hot commodity, you got the leverage of saying, nah, I want to work remote. You don't with not even a year in, you don't have that leverage.
I definitely agree. I hear a lot of people saying they want to work remote. And I think the biggest thing for me, granted, not hybrid or remote wasn't an option when I first transitioned into recruiting, but it was I learned the most when I was able to walk over to someone and ask questions. And it's different in this hybrid environment. I couldn't imagine being a new recruiter, being virtual, having to wait for someone to ping me back to ask questions and things like that. So I do absolutely agree to earn your stripes and get out the house. One of the questions that you had on here for me to answer is like, how do you really be impacting your community within your field, your area? Go outside, go into the office. And even if you are remote, I'm fully remote and I still go into the office from time to time when there is an event, because there is so much stuff that you're going to learn just from being around people that you're not going to learn being in the house, being virtual, mm-hmm. being on the webcam. When you get into the office, you hear things, you see things, and there are different things that will benefit you. And so don't be scared to start off, even if it's a hybrid role, yeah. to start off that way.
Yeah, and one of the things I preach in my Advanced Your Cybersecurity Career course is about visibility. So if you can get that visibility, that's one of those ways you can get promotions pretty fast as well if you become visible.
Mm-hmm. I'll talk to everybody.
Right. I ain't gonna lie. I've been miserable. I was only talked about five people in the office in Plano at Chase. I ain't gonna lie to you. You know, you seen it. You seen in person that I don't really know them people. I barely talk to them.
That's why I was like, I said, "Who you here with?"
Like, the funny thing is, the people I thought was gonna hire me then, like I said, they had put that role on hold. And I just talked to that director like last night. He's super cool, dude. I like people like that, like genuine people that reached me back out. Like, was like, let me know personally, hey, the road about to open back up again. Mm-hmm. And I was like, man, I held out for y'all as long as I could. I really did. I was going to say one of the other things companies do that work remote is they'll probably have some like Slack or Teams and have like a one specific chat that's just there just for people to mingle. And talk all day, post memes, funny stuff, kind of just build that camaraderie. Some people on the team play video games and stuff together. So there are ways you could do it, or you could just build your network. Like for me, basically by doing this channel and this podcast, I have people that's like in the blue team now. Like if I need to hit them about, hey, how you work this detection or this? Are you seeing this in your environment? We can jump on the call and talk about it. And those are one of the strengths that also that can help you when it comes to interviewing. It's like being able to figure some crap out. Like, hey, no, my network is deep. I'm just like the big C-level guys who are all friends, do with each other. That's what we do when we need help and we need to figure something out. That's how we spread the love. But man, it's still a weekday. I feel like a Friday, but it's Thursday.
It's okay.
Right. We're gonna let Christy like give us like three things you probably want to leave the viewers with, whether it's aspirations in life or getting a job or really much anything, kind of like what some words you want to, you know, part the guest with.
Yeah. First off, I want to say transferable skills are real. I use my transferable skills to get into the role that I am today. And I couldn't be happier that I'm able to help people land their dream jobs. And so transferable skills are truly real. Some of the things that I just have the goals for myself is to be able to help job seekers even more. So being able to make more content to help you guys kind of get through the job process, get through this rough point and be able to land you a job in tech. If you follow me on LinkedIn, also on Get Me Hired Christy on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, there's a link. And my bio and linked on LinkedIn that helps you build out your resume. So if you need help with resumes are something that I have a hard time with personally. So I really like this link and this tool to kind of help you build out your resume. So be sure to check that out. And also, I'm looking forward to just speaking more. I plan on learning as much as I can within my space. And being able to be an expert within this space and be able to talk and speak more on podcasts like this, meetings, interviews like this, so that I can reach more people that need to hear that their transferable skills are real, that need to hear that, okay, we have access now. Come look at these jobs. You're able to get a job at Google. You're able to get an entry-level role at Microsoft. They're available to you. And you don't have to go through the same barriers that I did as far as, oh, I didn't know about these jobs, or I didn't see anybody that looked like me in any of these roles. It's not like that no more. It's not like that no more. Now, of course, we can always use more, but now we have access. You have people like me that's gonna present those roles to you and help you get into those roles. So let's do it. Get Me Hired, Christy. Okay, I got you.
Yeah, man. Appreciate her for stopping through. And I also want to appreciate y'all that's watching and those of y'all that'll be listening in the future. Y'all have helped me get to 10,000 subs on the channel. So let me do this for y'all real quick. Clapping for y'all for that. And also, even on the podcast, I think we're about to eclipse like 12,000 downloads. Let's get those downloads up to like 1,000 a month. So when you're listening to this, please make sure that you leave a review and share it, especially if you're on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It really does help this podcast gain some more visibility, especially like I run into like so many people who finally find a podcast like late, and then they'll send me a message or something like that. Said, man, you don't know how much your podcast helped me. I learned like all these different things. So like she said, I'm just trying to, you know, increase my reach and just like help people out with like the free game we've just gave y'all right here. You know, back in the day, this would have been put behind a paywall. You didn't know these things. So it's good that we had this spaces now where people can come on here, talk about the career and how to navigate, you know, so you can avoid the pitfalls that we did. But I really appreciate everybody. I also got a giveaway coming out pretty soon. So make sure you follow me on LinkedIn. I'm going to announce how to enter the giveaway and hopefully be able to give some good goodies to you guys. But like I always say, man, until next time, let's stay textual and we out.